It was obvious that, you know, you had to find similar Bible words or concepts in the scriptures. And I think Roger's done a good job of identifying where the Bible gives us information that would help us in guidelines for these things. And even, which is a question I was going to ask, and I probably, Timothy was told to take a little wine for his stomach's sake. And I'm guessing what you're, what do you have to say about that?
Well, I can tell you what I believe. I believe that alcohol, wine, has a lot of uses. I don't believe, he says, take a little wine for your stomach's sake and for your frequent infirmities. I don't believe that alcohol is a curative for any stomach ailment or for other infirmities to begin with. I don't believe that. I believe alcohol has a number of uses. Alcohol, when I was in college chemistry or high, somewhere back there, they told me that the number one solvent in the world is water. What's number two? Alcohol. And there are a lot of medicines that are dissolved in alcohol, and so people see alcohol in the ingredients and think alcohol's helping me out. It's not. It's just a solvent that they chose to put the medicines in. And it dissolves chemical substances, and so it's often used in medicines. Alcohol is a cleanser. It's a cleaner. It's used as a disinfectant. It's a fuel. It's a depressant medically, and it is a treatment. Ethanol alcohol is a treatment for poisoning of other alcohols. If you drink isopropyl alcohol, rubbing alcohol, a treatment is drink ethanol. Ethanol will replace the isopropyl in your system, and you can get better. So alcohol has uses, but alcohol is not, I'm not a doctor, but I'm going to say this, is not medicinal. It does not cure any physical or mental disease. It does not cure stomach disease. It does not cure other infirmities. Often people think that alcohol is good for the heart, as in red wine, but it's not the alcohol. It's the other agents, the antioxidants and flavonoids or whatever's in there that are found in grape juice as well, or found in all dark-colored fruits and vegetables, strawberries and bell peppers as well. Alcohol is a solvent and a delivery agent for the antioxidants that are in the skin of grapes, but it's not the alcohol that is the agent that does you good and that kind of thing. I believe that Paul was telling Timothy to take no longer only water, but he needed to drink some grape juice, which is called wine in the Bible, along with that. That's what I believe about that.
Boy.
Thank you, brother. This may be outside the scope of your talk, but I just wonder if you'd like to take a moment to speak to the church's responsibility as far as its memberships or anybody else, as far as members of the church or anybody else, in engaging someone that we know who is addicted, has, you know, the phrase, the three-word phrase is hurts, habits, hang-ups.
Say it again.
I think it's hurts, habits, hang-ups. Alcoholic, anonymous programs, and so forth, some of which are becoming popular. I'm referring to Celebrate Recovery. There's a movement amongst denominations, been there for a while. In my area, I see them. See this program with a number of denominational groups, as well as a place or two that may surprise you in our brotherhood. And so, you know, what would be the extent of our responsibility, the limitations of our responsibility, for example, not just with someone outside the body of Christ, but when we have that situation inside the membership?
When we have an addicted person?
Yes.
As in an alcoholic in the membership?
Alcoholic or any other kind?
Well, I believe we as Christians always have a responsibility to help one another. I believe addiction is a tough help. And I don't know that anyone is going to overcome addiction without help. I believe that sometimes we often try to go it alone in addiction situations. I don't know if that ever works, although nicotine is very addictive, and people do often on their own overcome. When I say often, I don't know that they always do. But sometimes addicted people to nicotine overcome that problem. They don't always overcome that problem, but sometimes they do without a program. But addiction is very hard to overcome. And what I think needs to happen is that we need to realize the temptation is for all of us to say, I'm not qualified. Well, you probably are more qualified than you think to talk to people and encourage people and to help them. And you're going to have to realize in addiction circumstances they're going to fall and they're going to go back. If you take an alcoholic or a drug user, they're probably going to go back to that. At some point, you're going to have to start over again and keep going. At some point, they may be able to stop. I think the church's responsibility rests, I should say, I don't think the church has a responsibility, but I think every individual in the church has a responsibility to help a brother or sister of Christ. I personally don't have a problem with sending someone to an Alcoholics Anonymous program, maybe because I didn't have a bad experience there, not because I was an alcoholic, but because my father was an alcoholic and took us to programs and dinners and things like that associated with Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't have a bad experience. So I'm not afraid to say, you might try this out. Some of their things work, but alcoholics in Alcoholics Anonymous go back, they fall again and again and again. What you may be looking for is, I don't think it's the church's business to set up programs to take care of alcoholics or drug users. But I do think that it is the Christian's responsibility to do everything he can individually to help those who are addicted to various substances.
Well, I agree. I just wanted your thoughts on it. I actually studied with a fellow in Ohio for a while. It was a recovered drug addict / alcoholic, and he still wanted to attend he went to NA meetings at Narcotics Anonymous, and he felt very strongly that he needed to keep attending those in order to encourage the others, and he asked me to go with him one time, so I got to experience one of those meetings, catches people by surprise, and I said, oh yeah, I've been to an NA meeting before, but of course, it's interesting that it just seems like for a lot of these people, it's difficult for them to feel the same emotional bond if they become a member of the church that they've experienced in those organizations, too. And that's just, I don't know, an observation. But, you know, there's what I would call a Calvinistic twin to AA or NA, and it's called, I'm being analytical, I'm not trying to be critical, but it's the twin of Alcoholics Anonymous from a religious viewpoint, an attempt at that. Tack some scriptures to each one of the 12 steps. And if you go and research that, those who are responsible for, you know, a congregation's decision to go with one of those programs and to actually advertise their program as Celebrate Recovery, put it out on their sign, use the material, they're actually signing a document that says, we'll go by these rules. They're given the permission to change the curriculum to however they want to change it to, but if they do so, they're duty bound to not call it Celebrate Recovery. So you go and look at what it is as part of those tenets and the things that they're agreeing to and the 12 steps and so forth. There's some concerns there from a doctrinal standpoint, the things that they're expected to do. And you know, one of those things is to maintain confidentiality, just like it is for AA. You know, there's a conflict there with, you know, leaders of the church or members of the church when we have a situation that's after a while, you know, what really do you have there? So anyway, it's an interesting concern for our time.
Brother Batty.
I have two questions, and the first one has to do with 1 Timothy 5:23, drink a little wine for your stomach's sake. Now, my question is not, did Timothy have Crohn's disease, but it's no more a fact that grape juice doesn't do anything more for your stomach than alcohol. And I feel like we have two passages, one in the old Proverbs 31 that says, drink wine, not for your stomach's sake in that case, if you're dying. And we're afraid to use that in 1 Timothy 5:23 in the New Testament. But with that, I mean, grape juice, its effect on the stomach, can you just comment on that?
I don't think grape juice is a curative either for anything, although Welch's makes a lot of claims sometimes. But grape juice is acidic, and your body has a natural pH. And if you're having problems with the water in an area, I know that you may think that's strange, but grape juice combined with a little water. He says no longer drink, my version says, only water. He's not telling him to give up water, but along with that water, he's to use a little wine with that for your stomach's sake. Now, if you combined water with a little alcohol, I don't think that will do anything for your stomach or your infirmities. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. But I think he's talking about grape juice. And I'm not afraid to use that. I just don't think that alcohol is medicinal for your stomach's sake or your any other infirmities. Alcohol is not. At least we could say of grape juice, it has vitamins. And it may produce an acidic, alkaline situation in the water that helps the digestion of your stomach. It could do that. It has vitamins and minerals, antioxidants. People take antioxidants all the time right now, and it's a big thing. And yet grape juice has all of those things. And I just think it's not alcohol, it's grape juice he's talking about. And he says, use a little. Sometimes people worry about that. Because a little was all it took. Anytime you take a medicine, there's a dosage. I take an aspirin for my heart, not for my heart condition, but for as a preventative. And I take an 81 milligram. I take the smallest dosage possible because that's the dosage. There is a dosage that is involved in this situation. This is Paul's or God's suggestion here. And he has a dosage, and it involves a little combined with water. He's not saying that a gallon will do you more, but in this case, the water combined with the wine will do something for Timothy's stomach problems and his many infirmities. I'm not a doctor, and I don't know what that was. But it's not just stomach problems, it's many infirmities. And that sounds more like a generic, general, vitamins, antioxidant type of situation to me.
Can I follow that question up and ask my next one? Or is there two? With that being the case, I believe that we're all familiar with the fact that wine, grape juice, was the common drink of that day along with water. So why would he be telling him to take what is a normal beverage and measure it?
Well, whenever someone asks me why, here's the answer I always give first. Because that's what God told him to in the scriptures. That's why.
My next question has to do with something I feel like it's going to be a big deal in the near future. I was talking to a lawyer about California laws on marijuana, medical marijuana. I believe it's passed and it's legal now. Basically, you go in the office and the doctor asks you three very general questions. And he says, yep, you need, here's a dose of marijuana, or here's your prescription. So you go get your marijuana and you take a daily joint each day. And they have all these studies as to how medical marijuana, how marijuana helps certain conditions. I feel like that's going to be a big, that's going to be an excuse we have to deal with in the church. When people, especially young people, want to smoke marijuana, they're taking it for a medicine. Mm-hmm. And that daily joint is their prescription. And can you comment on that?
Well, let's see, I didn't bring all those stuff up here. There are studies that relate to the medical effects of marijuana. But as we go on, as we develop, there are also studies now that come out, you know, as we go farther and farther along, that show that those effects aren't everything that they were made up to be in the beginning. And we need to consider marijuana. Does it affect soberness? And I believe that evidence shows that it does. And we need to be careful about that and recognize that marijuana affects soberness just like alcohol, and are very similar. It doesn't do the same thing that alcohol does, but it infects people's ability to make decisions and coordination. And in California, where they have that problem, the big problem is, what do we do about people who are driving under the effects of marijuana? That's a problem because the alcohol in your bloodstream goes out relatively quickly. I mean, if you have it in your system, it's there and you're drunk. The markers for marijuana stay in your system all day and for the next day and for however how long. And so you may not be, they have trouble figuring out, what do we do? Marijuana produces intoxication. And that's why we're talking about this, I think. I don't know why we're talking about moral guidelines. Because it's not just legal guidelines that we're under, it's moral guidelines. And if we put ourselves into a situation where we are not sober, although there's another thought. What did we say about alcohol? What did I say about alcohol in Proverbs 31? If it's given and there is a doctor and a caretaker, but that person needs to recognize where they're at. I think that's what I would say. If it's given as a medical prescription, although like you said, it's very easy to get, right? I think we'd have to going to have to wait it out and see what to do about it.
Let's say someone is prescribed Vicodin or codeine for a temporary condition, like a dental operation or a car accident or something. Then that person recovers from that trauma before they run out of the medicine. And they say, okay, I'm going to keep this Vicodin in case I need it. And then 6 months later, they're working in the yard. They overdo it. And they say, well, I'm going to take this Vicodin. They're not prescribed by a medical practitioner. They just self-prescribe. A, is that immoral in your opinion? And B, is that unscriptural?
That's hard for me to answer because I've never done that. But a family member of mine does it, saves the Vicodin, you know, in case I need it again for some other reason. And I'm not going to be hard and fast and say, no, that's a sin. But it's something to be careful about. I think it would be wrong to sell it to someone else. It would be a sin to sell it to someone else, to provide drugs to someone else who you don't know how they're going to use it. But I don't have a good answer for that if you just save it at home and use it again. Except be careful. You're dealing with an addictive substance.
I had two questions. The first was kind of a more definition. Would you consider addiction a spiritual problem in and of itself?
Addiction is a problem that can have spiritual consequences. Now, the most common thing people here get addicted to is coffee and caffeine. And coffee and caffeine are so easily accessed today that I don't think anyone addicted to caffeine is going to do anything illegal to get it, or they're going to, I'm going to say this, but I don't know that it's true. I'm going to say they wouldn't choose caffeine over God. I don't know that that's true. But if you get into a situation like that, if you think you're addicted to caffeine, I think you should stop. I don't think caffeine use is sinful. It doesn't produce perception changes. But if you're addicted, I think you should do something to change that.
Okay, and my second question to kind of follow that up was kind of tied in with, you know, 1 Corinthians 6, where it's saying don't take your brother to court. In a similar fashion along those guidelines, should we not outsource our help to perhaps, like, you know, Floyd mentioned, Alcoholics Anonymous? Should we try and maintain, I mean, obviously I'm not going to look, strive to purposely have a surgeon that's in the Church of Christ. I mean, certain things like that outsource. But if addiction is a spiritual issue, then why are we looking to these help groups?
Well, I don't think, as Floyd mentioned, or maybe he mentioned, we should outsource it to religious situations or religious groups. Alcoholics Anonymous has enough of a religious in there. We don't need to put it into the hands of another religious group. I don't think that. I think we should keep it as separate from religion as we can, although Alcoholics Anonymous has a religious element to it. They suggest you recognize a God or a higher power, and they're pretty generic about it. So we don't need to go any farther. We don't need to. And alcoholics, it's not like we're going to introduce them to a bad element. They're already aware of a bad element. You know, you're going to introduce them to people who want to be a good influence on them. Stay away from alcohol. I don't have a problem with, but I think we should be as involved in their life as we should, as we can. I'm not sure that maybe someone else knows more about this. Floyd knows maybe, in a regular AA meeting, or will they allow a non-addicted person to come into the meeting?
Yes.
I was told one time they wouldn't. Well, if they will let you go, I would go with the person. It'd be a good experience for you, and it'll certainly be helpful for them.
Richard. Enjoyed it, Roger. Very good. Very informative. You touched on the question of if marijuana becomes legal it's a Bible question. We don't care what the state legalizes. I mean, lotteries are legalized across this country, but I still teach that it's wrong to gamble. And so I think it's a sin, even though it's legal, it's a sin to do it. Some states you can go to, I say states, I think in parts of Nevada, why prostitution's legal. But we still teach that's a sin. And if marijuana's wrong, marijuana's wrong. It doesn't matter who says that it's okay to have it. And so we need to teach people that they shouldn't be using it. And in regard to saving narcotics, when you've had, the Bible says we should avoid temptation. And I think we're just putting something up there as a temptation for ourselves. If we say, I'm going to save this because I might need it later on. You want to know how you'll really need it later on? Go to the doctor, and he'll prescribe you a new prescription. I think we should get rid of narcotics when they have fulfilled whatever our illness is. I think it's a very dangerous thing for people to keep them around. A, you may have young children or teenagers that are going to come across them in your house, and they're going to explore what these will do. Or you might have your house broken into by someone that's addicted and put your family at risk because they know you've got some medicine there that they want. It's a dangerous thing to have. So when you're done with your medicine, get rid of it. That's what the pharmacy tells you. That's what the AMA tells you to do. Don't save your medicine.
That's wise advice.
I think the newest drug, I guess, I don't know if everybody's aware of it, is it's not really smoking, but it's called vaping. And I'm really worried about our young people getting involved with that. It's electronic cigarettes or it's nicotine. And it's a way that you would be hooked on nicotine just like cigarettes, but I honestly think it's a way that people can hide it because it doesn't smell on you, and it doesn't smell like smoke, and it's compact. They can hide it, and they can have those things. So really worry about that because you see a lot of advertisements for it now. If you don't know about it, it's coming. It's on the radio. It's on television now where celebrities are doing it and say, I can vape anywhere I want to now. So if you see someone with a small little, looks just like a little tube or like a flute almost, sometimes that's what that is. But I really think if we don't watch it, some of our younger children or some adults could switch over to that or to do that. And I think it's not a good idea. So,
nicotine is a legal stimulant, right?
Yes, it is.
And it's addictive.
I really appreciated the way you addressed marijuana and everything as the issue with spiritual ramifications and things like that, the addiction aspect. I've been in a conversation, or multiple ones, with some different people recently about marijuana, who seem to be more informed than I would expect, you know. And I, growing up in school, had always heard really what you presented, that it's very addictive and it's psycho-altering. And they talked about kind of what Gary was talking about here, the vapor intake, and they viewed smoking of cigarettes and marijuana and that kind of thing as only damaging in the inhalation of smoke. But I think what you said really kind of helped me, because I didn't know how to answer him, you know. They claim the vapor inhalation has next to no ill side effects on it. They claimed it wasn't as addictive, that they had somehow separated the addictive chemical from the antidepressant or sedative chemicals. And I just wondered if maybe you had run across any of that in your research. I've never seen any studies like that. He quoted a few, and I couldn't remember the names to look them up later. It was a while before I could. But, you know, that seems to be, like Aaron was saying, one of the major problems that's going to come up, because he said there's a lot of people, and I did run across this, they compare it to caffeine, saying that it has fewer ill side effects than caffeine. And I really think that could be one of the major things that people of my generation and on will have to face and have to be able to address. And I wondered if you had any remarks or comments on that.
Were you talking about that vapor cigarette that Gary was talking about?
It's similar to that. It's a way that they take in the
nicotine.
No, it's a way to take in a certain part of marijuana. That,
oh.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Well, I don't know very much about that. I know THC is the active ingredient in marijuana, and if you were taking that, I imagine you would get the... That's what you're looking for in marijuana. You're not looking for the smoke. You're not looking for the... You're looking for the THC, and so that would be have sedative effects, and it would have some euphoric effects, and some people, apparently not everyone, but some people would become addicted to it. At least if it's euphoric, anything that's euphoric, and that's both stimulants. It's strange, but both stimulants and depressants can be euphoric. You can be euphoric when you're going up, and you can be euphoric when you're going down. And those kind of things create psychological addiction, which is different than physical addiction, but it's probably not any less difficult to break, and it gains a power over your brain that says, I want it. I can't live today without this.
One comment on the vapo industry and all that. One thing I do know is their products are not regulated by the Federal Drug Association, and you have no clue what amount of the drug or really what's in the drug, kind of like these protein supplements that I used to want to take to get huge like Rocky Balboa. You don't know what's in those. And also, you can pretty much smoke anything you want as long as you have a cylinder tube. And I met a guy who was smoking what I thought was a vapo, and it was marijuana when I saw his eyes in the light. So just something that kids can conceal, and you think they're smoking vapo, but they're smoking something else.
Have I overlooked anyone? Oh, Ron, right
there. Well, Roger, you've already made this statement once in your presentation, but as I've listened to all this discussion, there's so much smoke, I thought maybe it's overlooked. I want to go back to just an old-fashioned problem, and that is you stated earlier in your talk that drunkenness is a process. And I think this is very, very important to be impressed in the minds of young or old, because of the fact, you know, of quote-unquote social drinking. And the whole point is drunkenness, being a process, condemns the whole process. And that we don't begin, you know, with, oh, I can have one drink or two drinks and not be drunk. I think this just has to be reiterated time after time. And so, although you emphasized it, I just wanted to bring it to mind again for anything you want to say about it.
Thank you. I think, well, what I believe from the Bible is that when it concerns drunkenness, we're looking for a line to cross over. And when it comes to drunkenness and drug use, there is no line. Once we start, those things begin right from the very first to affect our brain. And there is no line. That's just how I think of it. There is no line. You want to say something else?
Well, I can say it. I think you can hear me. I can't hear most of you here, but I think probably you can hear me between my voice and your ears. I have voice. I have no ears anymore. Now, don't misunderstand that. I can't hear, but I can still listen. But anyway.
We appreciate you for what's between your ears.
The whole point is, alcohol, the first part that's affecting the drunken process is the frontal lobes. And the frontal lobes are affected with, that's our first area of social judgment. And then later on, our motor skills are affected. So we have already been affected, taking your word soberness, from the beginning, because the frontal lobes are the areas first affected, and that's social judgment. And so your social judgment is already being affected before you show any manifestations of some abnormal motor skills. And, you know, it's just like a coffee drip process. And eventually what happens, you know, if you drink enough, you eventually pass out. And that's what saves you from being killed, because if you didn't pass out and you kept drinking, you finally reach the brainstem area where now you're affecting involuntary response, which is simply heartbeat and respiration. And so that, but the very first thing is social judgment is affected first before motor skills may manifest the effect. And that's.
Thank you.
I don't know if I feel right following Ron Quarter, so I hope you'll forgive me for that. I just wanted to add something in the basically the next lane over. I don't have a lot to add about drugs themselves, but I don't know if anybody here in the audience is tempted with drugs. Probably most of us would be on the other side of it. I've been on the other side of it quite a bit, but I don't have a whole lot to, you know, add about that. But, I think when we think about when we're dealing with people, which is what most of us will probably be, is the NA meetings and the AA meetings that you go to, they tell you to the people who aren't on them that, if you're overlooking it, if you know someone who's on it and you don't do anything about it, you're helping them, you're enabling them, you're contributing to the problem. And so there's two things to me. The first thing is that we need to, in my mind, in order for me to help them, I think I need to be more loving and more hospitable. Having them in your house is not always desirable, but if you want to help somebody, having them close to you is the easiest way to do that. And we've already talked about hospitality, and I think that's a huge thing to me as far as helping anyone with anything. And then I know 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 5 is talking about the sexually immoral brother, but he's told to deliver such a one. They're told to deliver such a one over to Satan for the destruction of the flesh, for the saving of their spirit. And while I don't know that we necessarily need to ever, I don't know if that falls under that category, but while we need to be very loving and hospitable in order to cure them, the other thing is, sometimes at some point with drug addicts, you have to know when to let them go. And that's another thing. We have to love them enough that to help them, but also love them enough to, when we realize there is no more help, you have to realize when to let them go. I don't know if you have any comments on either in any of that.
But. I think you did just fine.
Our time is up. So. There are programs. Well, wait a minute. Do you have any summary statement?
No, I think I'm done.
Oh, okay. There are programs, guys, available out there for people. They call them lay helpers, or I don't know what kind of terminology you may discover. But what they found is somebody who's skilled and somebody who's just a friend. Friends often are more effective, which is kind of ironic. And there's a few skills that you can learn. So just find some of those. The Bible says, since we're talking about the Bible, you who are spiritual, restore such an one in a spirit of meekness, considering thyself. And so it's those who are stronger that are looked to, those who have, because of life experiences and because of the familiarity with the word of truth, they handle it correctly. They can be extremely beneficial. They can be extremely beneficial in any addicts and any problems of sin. They can be extremely helpful. So the best thing you can do is mature spiritually. Get yourself mature. Be strong spiritually and pray. Overcome. And get yourself prepared to help others overcome as well. And you can do it. I know you can do it. Those of you who know me, and I'm not going to set myself up as a great example here, but I will tell you that I've been with heroin addicts coming down, going up. I've been with people on all kinds of drugs. And one of the most insidious is meth. I can just tell you that right quick. I know some people without teeth. And if you want to see something scary, get on the internet and look at before and after meth addicts. I tell you what, you're going to be scared to death, because it really rots you from the inside out. And just lately, there's a new one called Croc, which is a combination of stuff, a meth-like substance mixed with gasoline and injected into yourself. You know, I hope these people don't smoke, is all I can say. But anyway, it's extremely bad stuff. Often within a few months, their skin literally rots to the bone. And so it's not good stuff. But you're going to go, how do people get that way, that even though they're dying, they're still wanted? And sin is horrible. And the devil, there's a reason why hell was prepared for the devil and his angel. He's a liar. He's a liar. And that's what we have to realize. What he promises does not last forever. Thank you, Roger, very much. That's been very helpful, and I hope that we will continue to study and equip ourselves better to confront the devil and to rescue people from the effects and cords of sin, as the Bible puts it.